This podcast will self-destruct. It's Snescapades, a chronological journey through the North American Super Nintendo library with a few pit stops along the way. We play them briefly. We judge them harshly. We rank them. That is pretty much all you need to know. I am Chase Keys.
Hi, I'm Emmy Zero.
And I'm very sorry, I do not have a Don Adams voice, it turns out.
You tried it. You said before we started that you had never tried a Don Adams voice before, but you were going to try it. I think that's very brave.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
It's just the kind of optimistic, you know, leap without looking attitude that that I think is very appropriate for the hero of one of the games we played today. Maybe all of the heroes, actually, now that I think about it.
I was just going to say, like, yeah, maybe unwarranted confidence is the theme of today's episode.
It could, in fact, be. I think that's fair. What do you say we get into it? We've got three games today, as is our sort of want. We have kind of grouped three games from the month of December 93, kind of along genre lines. The three we have to play today are all side-scrolling platformers, for the most part. One of them's actually got a fair bit of other stuff going on in it. But what do we have today? What do we have today for the people out there, Chase Keys?
Well, today, for the people, we have The Adventures of Dr. Franken, Jim Power Lost Dimension in 3D. I think I said that title right.
You did. That is the title.
All right. And Inspector Gadget.
All right. Well, what do you say we take them in exactly the order that you just read them? Start with Dr. Franken, move on to Jim Power, finish up with the good inspector himself.
Yes. Yeah. That sounds good to me. Folks, this might be a short one. I'm just going to say right out of the gate, let's talk about The Adventures of Dr. Franken. Okay, right off the bat, I'm just going to say, like, in a month that didn't have so many games in it, this would be relegated to a wrap-up episode.
Oh, but we're talking about it. I'm going to be real, folks. I am not feeling super great about the overall crop of games that were put out in December 93. There's some good stuff in here, but the fact that this game is in a featured episode, like, this is getting a spotlight segment and is not just something we're dealing with in 5 minutes and a wrap-up, really kind of goes to show that yeah, there's some deficiencies.
Yeah, this is a dire month for the Super Nintendo on the whole. Just a lot of people, a lot of companies who don't have very significant amounts of time or contributions to the game industry overall, just really putting crap out there, hoping that parents are too uninformed to know any better and get their kids something that they're going to be real unhappy about for Christmas.
God, can you imagine if you got The Adventures of Dr. Franken as a Christmas present?
Honestly, like, if my parents had given me The Adventures of Dr. Franken for Christmas, I may not be doing this podcast because I might have just sworn off games forever at that point. I don't know.
This game is bad, people. Like, okay, let's talk about it and who made it a little bit before we get into talking about the game itself. But let's just say straight off, this game sucks. This game is awful.
Yeah, and it's not even awful in an interesting way. Like, okay.
No, so, it's not.
Yeah, so this game was developed by Movie Time Limited, published by DTMC Incorporated. Who were they? I don't know. Their gamographies are, like, very easily listed on half a webpage on Mobi Games. DTMC, I remember them from Ranma One Half Hard Battle. Then, okay. You know, hey, that game was all right.
But I think that must have just been, that was a game they published, right? Just like this, they didn't like.
Yeah, no, they didn't make it.
But yeah, I mean, true. They didn't make this either. But you know,
Movie Time Limited made them. You know what? Let's just for the sake of having something to talk about today, let's see what else they did really quick.
And I do want to mention real quick. I thought it was Movie Time for a long time as well. It's actually Motive Time.
Ah, You are correct. It is Motive Time. I even wrote,
I misread it. I misread it as movie time every single time on the title screen or in doing research for this. Every time I read it, except for the last time, I was like, movie time. And then I'm just eventually I was like, wait, is that Motive Time? Okay, sure.
Yeah, you are absolutely correct. I wrote this in my notes. I just copy-pasted it. I don't know.
Well, because Movie Time makes sense. It's a game about a Frankenstein monster. Why wouldn't it be released by a thing called Movie Time? But no, it's Motive Time, a name that means nothing. Other than that maybe it's time for me to have a motive to, I don't know, do some crimes or something based on this game, because yeesh.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, hey, they did a Gremlins 2, the new batch game, but not that NES game that I actually kind of liked.
Not the game, not the one that people think is pretty good. Yeah.
So, yeah, they did a couple of Dr. Franken games. Dr. Franken might be their one enduring, not enduring currently, but like the one franchise thing that they had that they made multiple games out of. So this means this might literally be the best they had.
This guy, this awful big-headed Frankenstein monster with sunglasses.
Yeah, he's
the best they've got going.
He's the cool Frankenstein's monster because he's got sunglasses and board shorts and flip-flops.
But interestingly, only in the Super Nintendo version. I looked at some footage of the Game Boy game, and he just looks like a regular Frankenstein monster in that one.
Oh.
And I don't know what to do with that. I genuinely, like, they call him Frankie. Like, why wouldn't you use the wacky fun character design? It seems like it's the same game otherwise, but it I don't know. The Game Boy version feels like really grim in a weird way because you don't have like as cartoonish of graphics, but you do still have the same music and everything.
I mean,
so I don't know.
I don't know how I feel about any of that. Like, because Frankenstein's monster, but cool, is like such a, we are business majors who think we're geniuses, but have never had a creative thought in our lives. Kind of a premise.
No, he's a Poochie, right? Yeah. Like, just,
yes.
We're lucky they didn't decide to Rastafi him by 10%.
I mean, didn't they though? I mean, I don't know. I guess they didn't. They didn't give him dreads. It's not a Frankenstein's monster with dreads.
But no, that would be something. Yeah.
So, yeah, this is a side-scrolling platformer where you have multiple attacks. You have directional attack buttons, which, like,
yeah.
Why would you do this? Like, Double Dragon did this, but, like, at least that was a good game otherwise, so they're allowed to get away with that. They're allowed to mess that up once or twice, but this game isn't good enough for that.
No, it's not. The thing this game really has that just made it borderline unplayable for me is no iframes whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
So you start out with like a third of a health bar. Your sprite is very large, and the enemy sprites are also very large. You have to get very close to them to hit them. And the second your sprite makes contact with theirs, your health starts draining. And it won't stop. You will die within seconds unless you're like meticulously mapping out how much space you're moving. And this is not fun. This is a really saggy, really kind of like awkward feeling to control game. So like there's no like sense of like precision to any of it. You're just gonna die.
Yeah.
Constantly, instantly. And you're gonna see his stupid death animation where his head gets really big and he waggles it at you. And that's gonna be it.
The enemy design is all like vaguely spooky kind of stuff, but also just like random people on pogo sticks in some levels from what I could tell from the long play. Suitcases that turn into rabid dogs for some reason. Like
there's also a couple of levels that take place in I guess Japan where you're just fighting ninjas and sumo wrestlers while like the most like offensively, you know, stereotypical Asian music plays. Because this is a game made by British people in the 90s. Mm. So, yeah, not great there. Some evil trees, mummies at different points. That's all the enemies, really. There's, like, a bunch of them, but they're kind of... This game also has a lot of levels. Like, this game has, like, a fairly involved branching world map that you you use to select the levels as our boy Frank goes all around the world. Do you know why he's doing this? Do you know what the backstory is for, like, the just the story in this game?
Well, I mean, like, I'm pretty sure he has to rescue his girlfriend because it's a Super Nintendo game in the 90s. But also, like, I think he's having to collect her parts because she is also a Frankenstein's monster creature. Yeah,
that's right. And the reason for that is because they wanted to take – he and his girlfriend wanted to take an international vacation, but she didn't have a passport. So he just, like, took her apart and put her in a bunch of different packages and mailed them all to New York, but they got lost in the mail. So that's why you're going around the world to find the other parts of his girlfriend. Yeah, that's what's going on in this game.
This is so it's so uncreative. It's like, hey, let's take something from the public domain. Let's make it cool, or at least, you know, like what we business majors think that's cool is, and then just base all the levels around different stereotypes that we have about places that we've never been and don't care to go. So there you go. There's our game. The sprites are larger than they should be because, you know, got to be zany and cartoony. Like, this game's, like, more technically competent than a lot of stuff we've played, but the premise...
It has pretty good animation and pretty... it has big levels that are not quite the, like, airplane hangar style levels, but they're not that far off from it. Basically, like, a bunch of different, you know, like, physical layers to the level that you have to move between to find the pieces of whatever you're trying to find before you can exit the level. So, you know, yeah, you're right. In technical terms, it's pretty competent, but yeah, please continue with what you were saying.
But it's just so uninspired. The gameplay is so boring and just not good enough to hold up to, you know, a lot of good to mediocre things on the system either.
No.
This is just where creativity goes to die, is this kind of game. This is just such a cynical, a cynical thing that I am amazed anyone thought anyone would be fooled by this, that anyone would look at this cover and think, yeah, that looks like fun.
I mean, considering that I've literally never heard of this game outside the context of us doing this show, you know, I don't think that this worked. I don't think this worked for anybody.
No. And, like, you know, funny, zany, weird twist on Frankenstein's monster thing. Like, there are probably ways a more creative person could work with that.
Mm-hmm.
We've just had no shortage of stuff like that over the years. I mean, like, I remember a cartoon called Gravedale High that, like, only lasted 13 episodes that did this kind of thing. It's almost like somebody said, hey, remember that failed cartoon from a couple of years ago? What if we took that idea but made it even worse somehow and put it in a video game? Like, it's...
Right. I do want to mention one other thing before we... I think... Did you have anything else you wanted to say about this
before we move
on to the ranking? I do want to call everybody's attention to one other thing that is tangential to this that I do think is very funny and maybe the best, not as a game, but just as a concept, the thing that exists called, it's a Game Boy puzzle game from I guess also this year, actually, 93, called Frankie, Joe, and Dirk on the Tiles, which is a puzzle game that uses where three characters from different games that I think Motive Time must have had the rights to all get together and solve some little block puzzles. And those characters are our boy Frank from this game, Joe from Joe and Mac, and Dirk the Daring from Dragon's Lair. So there's a game.
Wow.
There's a crossover game with this, Joe and Mac, and Dragon's Lair.
Well, yeah, like, I guess they do have Joe and Mac, and I am seeing like a Dragon's Lair game in there.
Yeah, then they had just enough in the way of Dragon's Lair rights that they were able to do that. So anyway, that's neither here nor there. I have no idea if that game's any good or not, but it does exist.
That is so strange.
It's super strange. They're really trying to make Frankie happen, guys.
I try to be nice on this show and say, you know, like, hey, making games is hard and all this, but I don't know, folks. I just don't know if I've got a whole lot of nice things to say about Motive Time, just given what we're seeing here in this game. Like, because it's not necessarily...
It feels like an incredibly cynical game.
Yeah, it's not necessarily the lack of technical competence, because there is some technical competence here. It is just the most tired, boring idea for a protagonist, and
they put him in a really bad game too.
Yeah,
like there is nothing, there's virtually nothing to recommend this game beyond the character, and the character sucks. So
no,
this thing is miserable. It made me angry every second I was playing it. I have no good feelings about this game.
Is there enough technical competency here to say it belongs in D tier, or is it just like so bereft of creativity that that's going to be enough to sink it into F?
I mean, here's my thing. We actually do have a few technically competent games in F tier that were just so on their face just miserable that we couldn't put them anywhere else. You know, things like, for example, Battletoads Double Dragon and ActRaiser 2. And I think this is down there with those.
Yeah, I think you're right. So I think this is going to be an F game.
Yep, F for Frankie. So, sorry, Motive Time. I cannot wait to never play another game by you.
I don't know how many more we have, but... all right, well, that's going to be game number one, and...
That's really, really starting off on a note of despair this time. So let's hope the next game can alleviate that a little bit. What do you say we move on to Jim Power, The Lost Dimension in 3D? God, that's a hard name to say.
That's a hard, weird game to say, and this game might be even worse.
Yeah, is this game worse? I think it's worse, actually. I hated this game so very much. Everything about this game, I think, made me physically ill to look at, for one thing, which is not great.
I wouldn't be surprised, and I'm sure you're not the first. Like, the parallax scroll, like, that's the thing that will strike you, will punch you in the face once you, like, the minute you start playing this, is that the parallax scrolling on this is wrong. They've done something wrong.
It's very wrong. Yeah.
I don't know if they, like, coded it incorrectly and didn't care to fix it, or if they thought this looked cool, but...
There's something wrong with the way this game looks.
Yeah, but so you've got the layer that your character is walking on, essentially, like the game layer, if you want to call it that. You've got like a middle background layer and a backing background layer. And the middle background layer is moving faster than all of the other layers, including the one you are on.
Yeah, that's not how this is supposed to work. It looks sickening. Like it's I don't know. It's deeply distressing to look at.
And even without that, even without this huge, either like extremely poor judgment in what looks, you know, in how to present a game, or just unwillingness to fix something so obviously wrong with it. Mm-hmm. Even if that wasn't a problem, this game is just so gaudy. It is. It assaults your eyes. Like there's.
Yeah. It's
so busy. So, yeah. Go ahead.
The thing this kind of reminds me of a little bit is the game Gods, which we played like forever ago.
Yeah.
Which also felt really busy and gaudy. But this is like that cranked up to like 12.
Yeah. Not to mention like Gods was at least somewhat easy to read. Like the background wasn't so busy. Like here, I jumped multiple times onto things that I assumed were platforms. They were roughly the same color as the platforms I was on. They were the same shape, same tile height as the platforms I was on. But turned out they weren't actually platforms. They were things in the background.
And you fell in a spiked pit and died.
Yep. Because one-hit kills, hey, how about all the fun of Contra's one-hit kills without any of the awesome stuff that makes Contra Contra?
Uh-huh.
Like,
yeah.
Your character's firepower, I mean, it is almost non-existent. Enemies just appear very quickly from the side of the screen, not giving you enough time to react before they run into you. You at least get to respawn from where you died, but you've only got so many lives.
Yeah, you burn through those lives very quickly. Yeah, this is a way worse game than Gods. I mainly brought it up as a point of comparison because I would have assumed this was an Amiga game, but it's not. This game came out kind of simultaneously on the Super Nintendo and MS-DOS. And I did look at the DOS version, which does not have the problem with the parallax scrolling. It is not a whole lot better, but it does look readable in a way this simply isn't. And I don't know, did you have the sense that everything in this game was moving just like a little too fast? Like that everything was like sped up in some weird way that made it really like anxiety inducing to look at? That's how I felt.
A little bit, yeah. And I mean, like, you know, when you compare it to Gods, like, I will say that did immediately cross my mind too when I looked at this game as well. Uh-huh. Like Gods or Super Turrican, but again, just a really, really busy, like overly designed, you know, graphically speaking, kind of game, you know, one of those. It ridiculously ugly.
And very charmless too. Like there's no personality to anything in this. Like we got like the most generic, as you've probably gathered from what we've been saying, this is a kind of run and gun shooter, 2D platformer. And it has like the most generic action hero character you play as. The enemies are all just like vaguely defined monsters and robots. There's nothing interesting or appealing or distinctive about the world, the music, anything. Supposedly the guy who did the soundtrack for this modeled the soundtrack on the soundtrack from Ys. And like, I don't get that at all, because Ys has like really good distinctive music and this just does not. So
yeah. I mean, like, you know, we talked about a lack of creativity in the last game. But I mean, like, they called this guy Jim Power. Like, come on.
Yeah.
Come on.
They called him Jim Power, and that made me think this maybe was going to be like a sci-fi pastiche or something with a little bit of comedy to it. But it's not. It's just straight ahead, completely, completely po-faced. It is just so unoriginal that they named the character the way you would name a parody character. And also, that name bugs me. Like, the name of the game as a whole bugs me because I keep getting it confused in my mind with Keith Courage in Alpha Zones, which is a name I can remember because it's a more distinctive name for a better game. But I just cannot keep the name of this game in my head if I don't have it directly in front of me.
So I read somewhere, and I can't remember where I read this, and I was probably on Moby Games, that apparently this was originally, there were plans to make this a Buck Rogers game.
Okay.
There was a company called TSR that had been making kind of like new-ish Buck Rogers content in like the late 80s, early 90s. And I guess this was going to be part of that. And for some reason that the license fell through for this game. So they called it Jim Power. Yeah. It sounds like something they thought of at the last minute.
Yeah. That makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. God, I hate this thing.
Yeah, I hate this thing, too. Also, apparently it came with 3D glasses originally.
Oh, great. That's the 3D so part. You can,
So you can look at this nauseating thing in 3D, which I'm sure just enhances the experience greatly.
Yeah.
Also, I want to talk really quick about the cover of this game, or at least like the instruction manual. I don't know what the actual cover looks like, but it looks like a different artist drew the head, because not only does it not look like it doesn't mesh with the rest of the art style of the cover, but his head is just turned in a really weird way that doesn't look right.
Oh, I'm looking at it now. You're right. Wow.
They're like, look, we've got the face taken care of. We made a really weird caricature of Kevin Arnold's brother from The Wonder Years. I don't know what they did there.
Sure.
So you guys just handle the body and everything else. So we got the face figured out. And then they're like, oh, we didn't think you were going to, we thought you were going to draw him facing the, it's fine. We'll just use it anyway.
We'll just put it on there. Yeah. It looks like his neck is kind of broken, honestly. Like, it's kind of a grisly image. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. No, this instruction manual is pretty bad overall, because all the pages, there's like a Starfield background, and then the actual page that you're supposed to be looking at is on a skew, like within that background. So like you would have to like kind of tilt your head to read it. It's like, why do that?
It's almost like the people who made this didn't want people looking at it. Like, we want to make the background so busy and scroll in a weird way that people won't want to look at it for more than a few minutes. Let's orient the text so that it's almost unreadable. We don't want people actually perceiving our game.
And then the last 5 pages of the 15-page instruction manual are just ads for other games.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, okay, well, I'm excited about this new game I bought, Jim Power, The Lost Dimension in 3D, but I guess I can be excited about Best of the Best Championship Karate as well. All right.
Yeah, this was made by Laura Seal, which we've talked about them before. I'm wanting to say we talked about them when we talked about
Best of the Best
Karate Championship.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so I mean, they've got, you know, like a substantial gamography, but it ain't great.
It ain't great.
Best of the Best was okay, but
there's
nothing to write home about.
Yeah. Right.
And this game is quite clearly going on the F tier.
Right? Oh, yeah. I mean, we both said it's worse than Dr. Franken. And, you know, it's I mean, damn, this is one of the worst things I've ever played, I think. Like, it's really terrible.
Yeah. Yeah. This is a pretty bad one. I don't know if I'm going to say it's as bad as something like Race Drive-In or.
No.
But it's. It's down there. It's down there.
Yep. Yeah.
All right, folks. Well, we've got one more game to talk about today. It is Inspector Gadget. And is this one even worse?
No, this one is
This one. Quite a bit better, actually.
Yeah, it's quite a bit better. Yeah, we did not structure this as a continuing descent into hell. Inspector Gadget is here to open his spinny hat helicopter and lift us out.
Yep.
At least a little bit, yeah. So yeah, Inspector Gadget. Did you like Inspector Gadget when you were a kid?
I watched it, but I can't say I've got a lot of nostalgia for this particular series. I don't think it was ever amazing. A lot of kids shows were pretty formulaic back then, but
yeah,
ooh, this one was really really formulaic in a way that was not interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I watched this when I was really little. I did like it. I really liked Penny. Penny, Inspector Gadget's cool niece, who actually does all the things. That's the whole gag of the show, is that Inspector Gadget is Bumbler, and his niece and his you know, like 7-year-old niece and her dog are always sneaking around right behind him and actually solving all the problems that he thinks he's solving. So
yeah,
that's, I mean, the, like, whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, Inspector Gadget was always portrayed as is such a doofus that it was hard to actually, like, root for the character, you know, like you're interested in seeing like what how Penny and Brain are actually going to solve this. But then anytime Inspector Gadget, the titular character, is on the screen, it's just kind of like, well, this is just filler now because this has nothing to do with how this is actually going to wrap up.
Yep. Yeah. So it's like I remember liking the show when I was a little kid. And then unlike some other things from that time period that, you know, if somebody did like a new version of, like, for example, DuckTales, I'd be like, huh, I wonder how that is. Never occurred to me to even like check in on like any new version of Inspector Gadget, like no interest whatsoever in like following that or like rekindling whatever I felt about it. I think I was just too young. It was too basic in its way. So I don't really come to this with like a ton of, warm fuzzies because of that. It's like that was the thing I liked, and then I, you know, my brain developed a little bit more and I started liking Ninja Turtles and I feel more fondness for that. So yeah, that means that I'm kind of fresh on this game, you know. I can just appreciate it as a game, and you know what, I think this one is not bad.
No, it's not bad. So, you know, it definitely gets the look of the showdown pretty well.
Yep.
You know, it's another 2D side-scrolling platformer. You pick up different gadgets because, of course, you do. You're Inspector Gadget.
Yeah.
You know, Inspector Gadget is more competent in this game than he ever was.
Yeah, he is.
His TV show. He can actually fight effectively with his gadgets, which, like, I mean, of course he would be able to. He can stretch his freaking limbs and everything.
Right.
Yeah, it's weird that he was always portrayed. I mean,
it's not, because that's literally the whole concept of the show is, like, here's this goofy adult, but you are a cool kid like Penny. So, you know, you'll enjoy it when she, you know, does whatever the thing is that has to happen to, you know.
Yeah, I mean the whole premise of the show was, hey, what if Max Smart from Get Smart was a buffoon like Inspector Clouseau and was also a weird cyborg man for some reason?
Yeah, exactly. very, very much so. And yeah, in this game, apparently Penny's been kidnapped, so Inspector Gadget has to go all around the world to save her. And yeah, you know, there's, you know, you've got your haunted castle level, you've got your Egyptian pyramid level, there's a snow level, you know, all these things. And yeah, you use his various, you get a bunch of consumable gadget powers, basically, you know, bombs and little sticky arrows that you can use to climb walls with, and of course the like robot hand that pops out of his hat that you can use to like hang from things with. And yeah, you know, that's kind of a fun conceit for a game. It's pretty simple. It's very straightforward, but it's pretty well made, I think. And this was a Hudson game, I believe.
Well, Hudson USA. I don't know how much Hudson over in Japan. Yeah, I don't know how much Hudson over in Japan had to do with this. I'm going to guess probably not a lot. But,
well, it was a Japanese produced game. I was looking this up earlier.
Okay. All right.
But not, I think maybe, hang on a sec. Let me bring it back up so that I can look at this then. Yeah. So this was developed by a company that was called AIM. That I think is mostly known for being the people who would later go on to develop the Tokyo Bus Guide games for the Dreamcast, which I've heard of those because they're kind of a strange little thing. But yeah, they spent some time in the earlier in the 90s making various licensed platform games. They made a SWAT Cats game as well. So this is kind of just like in their wheelhouse. And, you know, it's like good workmanlike stuff, I think.
Yeah, well, now that I think about it, like, wasn't Inspector Gadget animated in Japan?
It was. In fact, it's actually a very anime-looking show if you ever look at any animation for it. So, yeah, like, I was trying to figure out, actually, if Inspector Gadget has any kind of, like, a pop culture presence in Japan. And I don't know that it does, but almost everything of note about Inspector Gadget, aside from like the, you know, the like the Matthew Broderick movie, was in some way, you know, largely made with Japanese help. So it's a kind of interesting thing.
I mean, it certainly, like, the cartoon certainly looked a lot better than your average Deke cartoon from back in the day.
It absolutely did. I think that was maybe part of why it took off the way it did, is like it actually looked cool and fun, you know, instead of just, you know, the kind of flat, miserable look that so many Deke cartoons had. So,
Like with the frequent animation errors, like they were common in the Super Mario Brothers Super Show, for example.
Oh yeah,
like the wrong character's mouth would be moving, things like that. Yeah, it was probably a pretty expensive show to produce, I would imagine, because like again, like I want to say, like, I think a pretty well-known studio over there handled it, now that I'm thinking about it. But I, you know, I'm not going to pretend that I know anything about it. Folks, go watch Paparina Knickknacks. He did an episode on Inspector Gadget. He will have more information about Inspector Gadget than you'll ever need to know, and makes it interesting. So just go watch that.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing I do want to say about this game that does...
back to the game.
Yeah, okay. In general, I like this game. I think this is fun to play. It's pretty straightforward. The levels have, you know, various like bonus stages you can get into from them, and, you know, various little secrets and things. One thing that is a little unfortunate is that at a certain like the third level or so of this game, you go to South America, and it does get kind of racist for a little while. And that's a shame. There are some guys in big masks throwing spears at you. So yeah, this is more that good old 90s racism that just kind of shows up unannounced sometimes. But aside from the racism, there's some pretty good you know, different, you know, environments in the game. And some pretty fun boss fights. Nothing is spectacular, I don't think, but it's all decent, you know?
There is one thing that is pretty spectacular about the final boss fight in this game, and that's that you will actually get to see what Dr. Claw looks like. Because if you ever watched the cartoon, you only ever saw his arm. But
That's right.
They did reveal what Dr. Claw looked like within the continuity of that cartoon through an action figure that got released, but with a strategically placed sticker over the box, so you had to buy it to find out, and through this game. These are the only two...
That's pretty special.
Yeah, these are the only two things that I'm aware of that actually show you what Dr. Claw in this cartoon actually looks like.
All right.
From what I remember, it's kind of like a cross between Blofeld from James Bond and Rick Sanchez from Rick and Morty.
Okay, sure. I mean, that would be distressing to, you know, turn the chair around and see that, definitely. So yeah, you know, well, that's pretty remarkable. That's really something there. I do want to point out something that's a little odd in the game's instruction manual that I think definitely speaks to kind of like how the age range that the Inspector Gadget property is from is for. The description of Inspector Gadget here clearly is written for the benefit of parents who have bought this game for their children and need to have the basic concept of it explained to them, and not for the kids themselves. Here it is. This is from page 3 of the instruction manual. Though motivated by the best of intentions, Inspector Gadget cannot always predict how his gadgets will work. This is part of the fun. As a testimony to his optimism, he plunges ahead, determined to make the best of whatever gizmo is at hand. Inspector Gadget's main characteristic, besides his physical peculiarity, is that he is always optimistic and confident about the results of his mission. As a result, he is rarely aware of the real danger that surrounds him. And then on the next page, the description of the villains in Inspector Gadget ends with this. In general, the villains are humorously incredible, as opposed to being realistically malicious. They are not murderers. They are kidnappers. Their singular mission is to capture Inspector Gadget and bring him to Dr. Claw.
Yeah, it's a weird way of putting that. It's
it just genuinely feels so clearly written for as like an explainer for an adult who was like, what the heck is this thing? Is this okay for my kid? It's like, yeah, I guess so. And then, so the instruction manual is that. Then it is a couple of pages of descriptions of items, a layout for like how the controller functions in the game. And then the back half of this is ads for other games made by Hudson.
Yeah, more ads.
So, yeah, I don't know. There's some nice art. There's some fun, like, line art drawings here of Inspector Gadget and Penny and Brain. That's the best thing I can say about the manual. But, yeah, I don't know. I enjoyed playing this. I thought it was pretty fun.
Yeah, there's some interesting mechanics in here, which, you know, the instruction manual points out, but probably wouldn't be obvious within the game itself if you didn't know it. But, like, you can hold down duck, and then Inspector Gadget, after a second or two, will pull out his magnifying glass.
And you can see invisible blocks,
yes,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's a neat mechanic, and I you know, it goes well with the whole idea that he's, like, you know, presumably an inspector or a detective that's, you know, finding clues and such. There's a lot of hidden blocks around. There's a lot of blocks around in general that contain power-ups, so you're rarely ever, you know, like, finding yourself depowered. He loses his coat if he gets hit, kind of, you know, Ghosts and Goblins style.
Little Ghosts and Goblins.
But it's,
yeah, he ends up in his boxer shorts.
Yeah, but it's really easy to find, you know, a health pickup that'll, you know, put his coat back on. So,
yeah.
Again, you know, it feels like it's a challenging enough game, but there's enough mercy mechanics in here that I feel like this is, you know, a decent game for kids to, you know, kind of get through, you know, kind of take their time with. Well, I mean, except for the fact that there is a timer on the level, so I guess that might be a problem.
Yeah, I think that timer is generous enough, though, that you probably are not going to be in too much trouble.
Yeah. But the other thing that I like about this game with the mercy mechanics is that I don't think you actually consume the gadgets that he uses. I think you're just powering them up.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
You know, once you've got the hand, you can keep using that hand. And I think, you know, if you pick up up to three of them, it just extends the length of them. But also, if you pick more than three of them, then it starts flashing, and now you've got like a special maneuver that happens when you do it. Like, I think for like the helicopter, it makes him invincible while he's flying for a short amount of time.
That's pretty neat. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's a smart way of doing that, where it still incentivizes you to keep collecting them even after you've gotten them, but it isn't going to take them away from you. For example, like after you lose a life, you know, possibly leaving you in an unwinnable situation. I think it's a smart compromise.
I agree. Yeah.
You know, there's also like brain pickups that'll extend the reach of his regular attacks. Yeah, I think it's pretty good. The one frustrating thing that I've had with this was that there's like a certain height of block that I find it really hard for the character to hit. You've got to time your jump.
I wanted to mention this because it bugged me. Like, it's like there's a bunch of areas where you have to use his punch attack to break blocks to move forward. But he is like three blocks high, and the punch attack only can get the ones that are like on the second and like the ground level. So you do have to like time a hit while you're jumping so that you can hit that third block. And that's just annoying. And I don't really see what the point of that is. Like, it seems unnecessary for them to have made it that way.
Yeah, I wish there was a high attack where you could have just like held up and hit attack, and then
fixed that.
Yeah, although I mean, I guess, you know, they wanted to let you be able to punch up, so
Yeah, I mean, we're always a fan of punching up on this show.
Yes,
so I get that.
This is true. Yes. But yeah, you know, overall, I think this is a perfectly fine game, and maybe even like a better use of this particular character and license than the cartoon it was based on was in some ways.
So, yeah, I mean, I think, yeah, I think this is pretty good. Like, I don't think it's like up there and like this is not like a Capcom Disney game quality game, but it's a good especially for like a licensed video game on the system. I think it's a good one. I think it's a pretty dang good one.
Yeah, it's close to that quality. I would say it's close to that quality.
Yeah. I liked this, and this is a Super Nintendo specific game. I think I don't believe this was like a game that they put out on a bunch of different platforms. There's like the first boss fight has like a cool like rotating like mode 7 room that it takes place in.
You're attacking a chandelier while the room seems to be trying to fight you. And I was like, is Inspector Gadget in the Splatterhouse now? What's happening?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's cool.
But yeah. Yeah. It's a fine game.
Yeah. And we mean that in like a good way, not in a kind of, you know, slightly derogatory, like, it's fine. Like, no, this is good. Like, this is, this is good. And I think I would feel really, you know, pretty comfortable giving it to like a kid to play and be like, yeah, this is like not gonna like frustrate you, but it will be fun.
Yeah. Would you feel comfortable putting this in the B tier?
I believe I would. Yes. That feels like a very good place for this.
All right. Well, at least we got to end this one on a better note than
it
otherwise was.
I've just two of the absolutely most dreadful platform games we've found. And we didn't even mention the fact that Jim Power is not just a platforming game. Like, yes, it has platforming levels and they're way too long, but it also has like top down, like maze levels and like shmup, like scrolling shooter levels, and they're all just as miserably frustrating and overlong and sickening to look at as the platformer levels. So yeah. Oh,
I didn't even know that because I didn't get that far.
Yeah, we didn't even mention that because, like, frankly, the idea that somebody would play this past the first level to see any of those bits is sort of inconceivable to me.
I mean, look, we actually got to the shooter levels in James Bond Jr. So
yeah, we did. That's what we're talking about here. Anyway, we don't need to get back into the slop with Jim Power. Let's just leave that one to die.
I don't think I would ever, I'd ever thought myself saying like Inspector Gadget is a shining beacon of light in the darkness that is December of 1993, but there it is.
Here we are. Yeah.
Yeah. But you know what? Maybe we'll find a few more glimmering beacons of hope next week when we talk about some fighting games.
Ooh, I sure hope so. What are we going to be talking about next time?
Next time we are going to be talking about Battle Blaze, Art of Fighting, and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Tournament Fighters.
Well, join us next time for what's sure to be an absolutely tubular episode. Until then, I'm ME0.
I'm Chase Keys.
Play it loud.
For show notes, game rankings, links to social media, research references, and more, check out our website, snescapades.show. Our intro-outro song is How Now Brown Cow by TechnoAxe, who very generously offers a ton of great music for free at technoaxe.com, TEKNOAXE.com. Thanks for listening.
Please take a seat, yeah, we're dying to meet ya.